Many of you are surely wondering why I have summoned you at this hour.
It's time for the big interview!
All right, boys, prepare to be dazzled.
That's right, it's big. It's the big names, the big news, the biggest stories. It's the next big thing. What's the big deal? It's the big interview.
What's going on here? This is big news. We need coverage of this.
Money Life brings you the big thinkers, the top experts, the brightest minds. With the big interview, you can stay informed about all the financial matters that are important to you, all in one big package.
Oh, boy. Got a package this big. I've always wanted to have a huge package.
Did my taxes pay for this?
The big interview. Sit down, strap yourself in, and get ready to learn.
Your mind is beginning to work. It's entirely due to my influence, of course. You mustn't take any credit.
Well, today I'm hoping that we can get our mind around everything that's related to the Fed, because one of my absolute favorite folks to talk to about things at the Fed is here. His name is Doug Roberts. He is the chief investment strategist and the founder, I should point out, at Channel Capital Research. For more information, channelcapitalresearch.com, DougRoberts.com, on Twitter at Doug S. Roberts. By the way, he is the author of Follow the Fed to Investment Success. Doug Roberts, it's been too long. Welcome back to Money Life.
Always good to be on the show, Chuck. Good to be back.
So the market, as like rule number one, hates uncertainty. The last time you and I talked was actually, I believe, sort of near the end of last year, where we were saying, hey, the one certain thing will be we'll get a rate increase, and then we'll see when the second one happens before probably the middle of the year. Well, we got the first one, but boy, did we get uncertainty for the rest of everything else. When you look at things right now, is there any way that the Fed can get back on its planned mission of raising rates without cracking the market between now and the end of the year?
I doubt that they really want to do that, Chuck, not just for kind of cracking the market, so to speak, but also the Fed does not like to be accused of partisan politics. So therefore, they're going to want to stay out of the picture unless there was a compelling reason either to raise rates or lower rates until after the election. So if you do the math, that leaves us to December as the first possible rate hike at the earliest. I think, you know, and that's becoming more and more certain, even with the uncertainty in the economy kind of prevailing. You're starting to see that. Remember, the last FOMC decision was unanimous, and the lone hawk before, Esther George, concurred with the majority. You're now seeing Jim Bullard, who was the other someone with hawkish tendencies, starting to speak much more dovishly. You're starting to have people talk about only possibly one rate hike for the year, if at all. So for the most part, what you're starting to see is what I call a dovish evolution. And even for the rest of the year, if you get these sounds about raising rates, it may be starting to look like part two of the irrational exuberance speech that we had 20 years ago.
Okay. So how, if that's what we're talking about as an environment and a setup, how do you follow the Fed to investment success, using the title of your book, at a time when the Fed doesn't seem to be going anywhere?
At this point, it's like, you know, we could have a melt up, you know, but most likely you're going to be bouncing around in a trading range. We may have hit the top of the range, but although if things stabilize financially, in terms of, and you know, the fear of a black swan event starts to lessen out in the markets right now, that somebody says there's not an explosion within the banking system which is going to cause us a problem, then you could have a slight melt up as you head toward the end of the year in terms of what's going on, despite all the noise that's popping up that seems pretty scary. If you look at the underpinnings, actually, as long as things don't explode in Europe, you're seeing more and more money come here into the United States markets and stabilization. Again, stuff that you've seen in the past. As long as there's an explosion somewhere, that actually can be a positive. The second thing combined with that is the Fed doesn't look like it's going to raise any rates soon. So for the most part, that means it should probably be positive for equities and for gold.
Can, I mean, at this point, I have been saying for a while, the Fed has waited too long. The Fed needed to take bitter medicine that it didn't want to take. As you point out, they don't want to play partisan politics, etc. But does there come a point where the Fed actually just kind of says, look, we need to act, or we're creating a much bigger, much more painful situation down the line?
I think really, for the most part, that decision was kind of made 20 years ago, and you're talking more about structural reform. Because if you go about 20 years ago, the question was, were we going to bail out the world banking system, or were we going to just bail out the United States banking system? And when we switch kind of from the discount rate to the Fed funds rate as the target, and, you know, really what you started doing is that's something over which you have less control, less regulatory control directly. And that's kind of like a bigger issue that really the Fed is wrestling with. They're talking about re-regulating, you know, kind of like the banking sector in this country. But as long as, you know, the banking sector is linked to banking overseas and there's not some type of a wall or a break off in between them, you're kind of locked into the same situation. And you've kind of seen this in the recent Fed decision, all of a sudden with Brexit, all of a sudden with you know, the oil crisis and the banking system, the Fed is very, very hesitant to take anything which could affect really not our economy and not our banks, because they seem to be doing relatively well. I don't think you're hitting any home runs there. But at that point, they're hesitating to have something which could start a domino effect overseas, which they can't see coming, which, by the way, was what happened in 2007, 2008. It was really, at that point, we were able to handle, you know, essentially the liquidation of Bear Stearns, the liquidation of Lehman Brothers, and then all of a sudden, AIG popped out of the woodwork, and they had no idea that they were doing, and then it was really, do we nationalize the banking system, you know, and just, you know, start all over again, similar to what Sweden did on a much smaller scale in the 90s, or do we bail everybody out? And they were essentially forced to bail everybody out.
How much does a situation like the Brexit play into this? I mean, it certainly creates uncertainty. It also had the central bankers from around the world sort of ready to step up and provide liquidity. So how big a wild card is that? And when you think about wild cards, is that a bigger wild card, a bigger unknown than, say, the election?
I think really with regard to Brexit, it's not maybe the event itself. It's really the domino effect in the financial system. Is there some rogue trader out there who's made a heavy trade bet and all of a sudden he's insolvent and we don't know about it and we're about to find out about it? That's kind of like domino event one in the black swan area. The other thing is domino event two, is if the Brexit truly does come to fruition, does that mean we're going to see more of the same? Is Scotland, even within the United Kingdom, is Scotland going to succeed? Secede? Are they going to secede and basically become, you know, kind of almost a federation for the UK, or they're going to enter the EU? Is possibly Northern Ireland now going to have the votes to possibly join the Irish Republic? Is Italy, and despite all that, is then Italy going to leave and possibly go out on their own? So it's like there's uncertainty as to really where this is going to end. People know this is the beginning, and the beginning really isn't that big a deal. It's really where the end point was. If you looked at, you know, the subprime loans, and you saw that, I guess, with The Big Short, the movie, the problem wasn't so much just the, you know, basically the subprime loans themselves. It was the degree of leverage associated with it, and then leverage upon leverage that really nobody was aware of and didn't find out, I guess in the words of Warren Buffett, when the tide goes out, you find out who's wearing a bathing suit, and people didn't know that until the tide came out. I think that actually, to answer your question, is probably a bigger uncertainty than the election at that point, because the election looks like the favor, you know, Secretary Clinton. If you look at the latest polls, you know, again, taking politics out of it, it's really more of the same. So again, a little bit more certainty, even if it's not maybe the direction that you want to go. But Wall Street still prefers certainty over uncertainty. And, you know, even if it is, the question is despite the bluster, is Donald Trump going to be significantly different, or is this really more something that's played out on television rather than anything that's of substance. And really, it's the overseas things, the things that we can't see, that we don't fully comprehend, that really are the more important, I guess, if you want to call wild card.
Let's broaden things out for you, because of course we've only talked, central banks and everything else. Let's get a bigger, broader take for you on what the market, what you think the market can achieve with this kind of uncertainty. We've had a year that, for all the volatility and all the headlines, it almost seems like everybody has ignored the fact that through the first 6 months, the S&P 500 was basically up 3.75 points, and three and three quarter percent. And if you did that for the year, you'd be up 7.5. And I think most people would be like, "Yeah, cool, I'll take it." So,
and that's a distinct possibility if things stabilize. But the real problem that you have is right now it's been more of a trading range. One day we're up 3%, a week later we're down 1%, and we're kind of just bouncing around, not making too much progress.
So what is your expectation going forward?
I think right now we're going to see more of a trading range. I think as things tend to stabilize a bit more, you could have a slight melt up. Again, all things being equal, as we start to approach the election and becomes more certain that there aren't any things that are going to explode, the real danger is there are some landmines out there that could really throw a kink into the armor, where things would explode and could cause problems. But then again, the positive side there is then probably the central banks are going to be less likely, to raise rates and to assume a more dovish stance. The real question is, thus far, it's been a nice balancing act. Kind of like when something like Brexit occurs, then all of a sudden, as you pointed out, the central banks start to, add liquidity and it balances it out and we're back to where we started from. At that point, the real question is there something that can pop up that kind of like doesn't allow us, to use the old nursery rhyme, for Humpty Dumpty to be put back together again?
Right. Does that mean that when you talk to clients, et cetera, you're recommending they get defensive? I mean, we've got an interview coming later in today's show with somebody who's in the gold business. And, he's talking about how the chart on gold right now resembles what was happening for the chart on gold after Lehman in 2008.
It's technically possible, and gold should be part of a balanced portfolio. But you'll also find that, gold did very well, but so did treasuries, too, because people look for the safety of bonds. So you almost have a more balanced portfolio and realize that, you may not want to take a heavy bet in any one direction.
And if you're going to keep gold as part of a balanced portfolio, stick to rebalancing regularly, do it with physical gold, do it with ETFs, do it with the
ETFs. You could do physical, but physical is a fairly illiquid market and involves storage costs. If you're going to take coins, that's a little bit of a different market. But probably, gold ETFs are probably the easiest way to basically hold on to it and trade it. But again, for individuals, there are certain negative tax implications associated with that. But in this type of environment, our models have shown they tend to, favor a possibility of gold performing quite well in the future.
Well, Doug, it has been great to catch up with you. I appreciate you taking the time out and joining us here on the show. I look forward to having you back on, and we're not going to wait so long before we get you back.
Always great to be on, Chuck.
Doug Roberts is the Chief Investment Strategist at Channel Capital Research. If you want more information about the firm or his book, Follow the Fed to Investment Success, go to channelcapitalresearch.com. Or to learn more about Doug, go to dougroberts.com. And he's on Twitter at Doug S. Roberts. All right, we just hit the halfway pole on the Friday, July 8th edition of Money Life. But we've got lots more to go. Up next, Greg McBride from Bankrate.com will be here talking, rates as they hit home, mortgage rates and credit card rates and stuff like that. We'll do that when Money Life continues right after this message.